Coming up on this episode of Disneyland Weekly, Splitsville strikes out, animatronics lose their heads.
Visit Imagineering for just $3,500, and we continue our trip around the park. Disneyland Weekly starts now.
This is Disneyland Weekly.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Disneyland Weekly for the week of January 31st, 2018. I'm Tig Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. Thank you for joining us this week. Now, let's get to the news. In downtown Disney, Splitsville is in the news for a couple of reasons this week, and neither of them are good. First, the new bowling alley dining location was scheduled to open Monday but was delayed. A company spokeswoman said late Friday, quote, "We have a few more tests and adjustments to make before we open our doors in the downtown Disney district." A new opening date was not announced.
That was actually the second strike, get it, this week for Splitsville, as the Orange County Register reported that there were new five-star reviews without it even being open yet. How could that be? Well, there were 35 reviews on Facebook, all rating the location at five stars. All of the reviews appeared to be people that were listed as working for Splitsville in other locations, and even one person who was listed as being from Visit Anaheim, the local tourism bureau.
Inside the parks, animatronics were losing their heads. Reports on social media showed the animatronic Ursula from the Little Mermaid attraction in Disney California Adventure with her head hanging off, looking almost decapitated. Oddly enough, on the other side of the world at Disneyland Paris, the Auctioneer animatronic was seen in a similar state. I don't know if any of you have seen the video footage of Ursula. We haven't found any footage yet of the Auctioneer, but I found it kind of funny and I had to point it out to Tag. But if you look closely, the Ursula animatronic is still singing along and not missing a beat to her song. So that's a true diva for you right there. Lost her head, but still putting on a show.
How would you have reacted as a parent taking your small child and you come around and Ursula's head is hanging off?
There's probably a reason I'm not a parent. I would probably just laugh. But it would be really hard to like explain that to. Well, it'd be hard to explain it to your child. But then it'd be a good way to also explain that they're not real. Because I wonder, too, if, you know, maybe kids. I could see how some kids would be maybe a little scared because she's kind of, you know, she's a bad witch. So I could see how they'd be a little afraid. So you can see she's not real, honey, you know. I don't know.
I don't want to.
I try and give it a positive spin, I guess.
I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but I know a few years ago Disney was sued because a child saw Mickey Mouse take off his head. Just a backstage area, like literally just off stage, and it like the parents sued Disney for like mental trauma because like Mickey lost his head. So I'm wondering if somebody's going to make a stink about Ursula.
Gosh, I hope not. I would like to know how exactly that happened, though, because it just looks like...
She doesn't flail around that much, so it didn't seem like it would just pop off.
Well, and I would have thought... I don't know. I mean, I guess I would have thought that it would have been attached to her body, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, apparently not. It looked kind of like it was a clean something or other, so I don't know if they think somebody was... doing, you know, if somebody did that on purpose or if it was just a malfunction. I guess we'll find out, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know I did see a picture of the Auctioneer in Paris lose his head, and that looked very similar. Like, it just looked like it was just like
popped
off and it's just hanging there by the cables. So hopefully they'll figure it out and they'll make sure during maintenance that the heads are securely fastened. The Paradise Pier sign that adorned the entrance to the area when crossing over the pier bridge has been completely removed this week. It appears from the concept artwork that there will be a replacement built in a similar location when the area is transformed to Pixar Pier is complete in April.
Last week, Toontown turned 25. There were all kinds of activities, including photo spots, character meet and greets, and more. As we have talked about previously on the show, we do think after 25 years, this area needs to be updated with some more experiences or possibly changed into a completely different theme, like a Nightmare Before Christmas Halloween Town. What changes do you guys think need to happen?
Yeah, I think something needs to go on. When I was reading this on Mice Chat, They were talking about how a lot of the attractions that were there opening day, they gave it like a nice feel. There was the Jolly Trolley that like moved around, and that just sits there now. Like, it doesn't go on the track that's there. The only attractions really there is you got Gadget's Go Coaster, which people have said it takes longer to load than to go around the loop.
Oh, sure.
And then you've got Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin. You got a couple. You can meet Minnie and you can meet Mickey in their houses. And then
I do think the houses are neat.
Yeah, I agree.
It does take quite a while to get through the line to then meet Mickey or Minnie, but I think the houses themselves are pretty cool. I wish. Can you go through Donald's house, or is it just there? Same thing. You can Goofy's.
Goofy and Donald. You can kind of go through, and there's like the Chip and Dale thing too. Mm-hmm. And they used to be bounce houses and like play things.
Oh yeah, that's right.
But people, you know, with thousands of kids going through, tore it up, and then Disney's never fixed it, and so they just kind of, that's part of the problem. Well, one area that Disney is starting to rework is the tram area by the Mickey and Friends parking structure. The current changes are to make way for the new parking structure that is going to go where the current tram route is located. During this time, much of the disabled parking will be unavailable, so those with parking placards should be prepared to park over in the Toy Story lot until construction is completed.
If you have $3,500, you can join a new Adventures by Disney 4-day, 3-night escape that will take you on a private tour of the Walt Disney Studios, Walt Disney Imagineering, and VIP experiences at Disneyland. The VIP Disneyland portion includes a visit to Walt's apartment above Main Street, props and costumes from the Disney Archives, and more. The escape is available on select dates in spring and fall of this year. I want to go. Oh, that sounds so cool. I do not have that much money just chilling, because obviously we would also have to get some airfare to get out there, but holy cow, that sounds amazing.
I agree. I saw this and I was like, why can't I have $3,500 right now?
Plus just, airfare.
Honestly, just going to Imagineering, I think, would be worth it.
Oh, because
like
all
that's an experience.
It.
Like, how often are you going to get to experience that? That's pretty cool.
Well, and I mean, can you take tours of Walt Disney Studios on its own or no?
I think there's been like some, I think if you were like a member of D23, I think there's been tickets that you can buy for stuff like that. But I don't think they've done anything with Imagineering as far as I know.
And props and costumes from the Disney Archives. Oh.
Well, the Disney Archives would just be awesome. I mean, I'd like to take a tour of the Disney Archives.
Oh, I want to go so bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bucket list.
Bucket
right
list.
There. Bucket
for
list
sure.
item.
Hopefully they'll continue to offer it. If anybody goes on this, please send us pictures,
yes,
video,
let us
anything
know.
You have. Yep. Well, this week for our discussion, we're going to continue our tour of Disneyland, and the way we're going to go about this week is a little different. Well, it's kind of the same, but just to kind of give you guys an idea of what's going on, is so we started on in Adventureland, and we went to New Orleans Square, and then we went to Critter Country, and now we're going to go over to and then we went to Frontierland, and now we're going to go over to Fantasyland. So we're going to handle each of these attractions as you would be coming from Frontierland over into Fantasyland. That's how we're going to do it. So the order in which we're going to do this is we're going to do the Casey Jr. Circus Train, Dumbo, Storybook Land Canal Boats, It's a Small World, The Matterhorn, Alice in Wonderland, Mad Tea Party, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, Peter Pan's Flight, The Castle Walkthrough, Snow White's Scary Adventures, King Arthur's Carousel, and we're going to finally end on Pinocchio's Daring Journey. So, we got a lot to go through, so we're going to try to go through this. We're probably not going to be as in-depth as we have been in other lands, just because there are so many attractions here.
You know, I guess I never realized how many attractions there were in Fantasyland. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
It's awesome, though.
So something we've neglected to do that I want to catch up on is the original lands at Disneyland all had dedication plaques and were all dedicated by Walt Disney on July 17, 1955. So for Adventureland, the plaque reads, "Here is adventure. Here is romance. Here is mystery. Tropical rivers silently flowing into the unknown. The unbelievable splendor of exotic flowers. The eerie sound of the jungle with eyes that are always watching. This is Adventureland." For Frontierland, because New Orleans Square did not have one and Critter Country did not have one, but for Frontierland, did have a dedication plaque, and theirs was Frontierland. "It is here that we experience the story of our country's past, the color, romance, and drama of frontier America as it developed from wilderness trails to roads, riverboats, railroads, and civilization. A tribute to the faith, courage, and ingenuity of our hardy pioneers who blazed the trails and made this progress possible." And finally, Fantasyland. "Here is a land of imagination, hopes, and dreams. In this timeless land of enchantment, the age of chivalry, magic, and make-believe are reborn and fairy tales come true. Fantasyland is dedicated to the young and the young at heart, to those who believe that when you wish upon a star, your dreams do come true. One thing that's very important to get off the top here with Fantasyland is Fantasyland was said by Walt Disney to be his favorite land in the park. So there's that. So think about that. Maybe that's why it has the most attractions.
Perhaps.
So kick us off, Teresa. Casey Jr. Circus Train, what do you got?
All right. So as you're going to find that there's going to be a similar theme here, but Casey Jr. Circus Train was an opening day attraction. It is located now in Disneyland and Disneyland Paris. However, Paris has more, it's a roller coaster designed for smaller children. So it's a little bit different of an attraction. I found it interesting that even though this was an opening day attraction, it did close the following day for safety testing and then reopened again on July 31st, 1955. So it was there for one day and one day only.
And this is one of those attractions, too, that I think is awesome and shows how great Disneyland was and how it was planned and operated, because this attraction and the Storybook Land canal boats that we'll cover in a few minutes are, like, linked. They're like... They are two attractions that use the same plot of land, right, and it works.
But the thing that's neat is that you can ride both of, you know, you can go on both of these attractions and see different things, I guess. You're still looking at, you know, the same, I don't know, the same sets or whatever you want to call it.
You're looking up at everything, and when you're on the train looking down.
Yeah, so you're looking at the same stuff, but you get to see it from different perspectives, so you get to, you know, notice things more that you probably didn't see maybe the first time.
Right. Now, I'll tell you one cool thing about this is, I honestly, if you have never done this before, this is how you should, and when we go, this is where we're right. If you sit in the very back car, looking backwards, because the bench faces the back of the train.
Yeah, it's flipped around.
It is awesome, because you go up the I think I can, and when you're in the back and you come kind of down from that hill, like, it's whipping you around. I mean, you said Disneyland Paris is kind of like a roller coaster. Well, I would argue that that the Casey Jr. Circus Train after the hill kind of whips you around. What else you got?
Well, that's really all there is for that. So continuing on, unless you're finding something.
I'm just trying to see here. There's two trains.
I was trying to keep it brief since we
I'm sorry. I'm just looking here. It's 3 minutes, 40 seconds long. At Disneyland, and I think it's a good attraction. I think it's one of those attractions that, like most Fantasyland attractions, I think a lot of these are kind of overlooked.
I will confess, I have actually never been on the Casey Jr. Circus Train, so that will be remedied next time I am there.
Well, what's cool is there's cars where you can, like, sit and you're out in the open air, and then there's, like, caged cars that, like, you get in and they, like,
it's like a circus train. It is.
But it's just one of those attractions that, like, I think a lot of people, like, obviously Fantasyland, I think a lot of people over 12, unless you have children, probably don't really go into Fantasyland a lot.
That's true.
Or they hit up, like, Peter Pan, because everybody likes Peter Pan. Or they'll hit up, like, the teacups, because that's kind of more adventurous, or you were going to talk about the Matterhorn, or It's a Small World. But a lot of these original attractions that are in the main part of Fantasyland, I think a lot of people just kind of, they want to go to the bigger things.
And depending on how much time you have, because that's always been my issue, is time. I don't have enough time to be able to do every single thing that I want to do in the park. So, unfortunately, usually those attractions get overlooked. So
we will remedy this.
We will.
Moving on.
So, Dumbo the Flying Elephant. So this is one of probably the few attractions that is located in all six of the Disney parks. This was not an opening day attraction, however. It was delayed. It didn't open until August 16th of 1955. One interesting little tidbit I found was one of the elephants from the ride is actually in a collection at the Smithsonian National Museum of American History in Washington, D.C. This elephant was donated back in 2005 for the 50th anniversary.
That's cool. I was just looking at some of the other things here about it. I don't know if you had this on your list. I know we just discussed it before the recording the podcast, but this I think is funny. During his 1957 visit to Disneyland, former U.S. President Harry Truman politely declined a ride on Dumbo the Flying Elephant due to the elephant being a Republican symbol.
Another fun fact I found was the original design for this attraction was going to be called the 10 Pink Elephants on Parade. It was going to represent the, I don't even know how you want to call it, but the elephants on parade, kind of psychedelic portion of the movie.
The trippy part.
Yep, the kind of trippy part. So the elephants were all painted pink when they were actually installed. However, Walt objected, not wishing that his guests ride elephants themed to a hallucination and ordered them painted gray. And so that's where we are today now.
You know, one other thing, I know that we were talking about this too, but I feel like Disney also wanted them all to be Dumbos, because who wants to ride, you
that's
know what I
true.
Mean? Like, wouldn't
yep.
everybody want to ride Dumbo?
Well, in the original one, they were all pink. So yeah. If Dumbo was present, he would maybe be sitting atop where Timothy Q Mouse is, but he was not one of the ones you could actually ride.
I think it's a good change. I think having Dumbo there is good. The other thing that's coming up soon is obviously this attraction in the next few months is going to be reopening. It's closed right now with an expanded queue that's going to be covered. I'm excited for that. You know what's interesting to me is there's two attractions in the park. I think just the two. There's two attractions in the park that are basically the exact same attraction. There's the Astro Orbiter and there's Dumbo.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So if you ride one, you've ridden the other, basically. Yeah.
Well, does the Astro... We should check this. Does the Astro... I feel like... And maybe it's a perception thing. I feel like the Astro Orbiter is taller and you go higher.
Maybe. But they're both a spinny ride that goes up and down.
Yeah.
So who cares? And I always thought it was interesting... You know, I won't go on Dumbo every single time I go to the park unless I'm trying to hit up all the attractions on the map. And usually that'll be like one of the last day things, like, okay, you know, we've got on everything, so I'll go on
time.
It. Because it's not that exciting to me. You get on it, you spin around, you go up and down. And I'm the type of person, I don't go up and down a lot. I just go all the way up because I want the best view when I spin around. One thing that I do like about the Magic Kingdom version of Dumbo is there's two of them. Mm-hmm. So double the capacity.
Yep.
And when they get spinning at the same time, it's kind of cool because you're passing the other people.
Mm-hmm.
So... I like it. I don't understand why it always has such a long line. I guess little kids like it and stuff.
You know, well, it's because once you get everybody on, you have to sit and wait for everybody to ride, and then you got to get everybody off and put everybody back on. So it's not good for capacity.
I was going to say, it's got a pretty low capacity. I think I was just looking here that it's only like 1,200 people an hour or something like that. I don't know. I like Dumbo. I'm glad it's there. I'm excited to see what they do with the queue. And moving on.
So we're on these Storybook Canal Boats.
Storybook Land Canal Boats?
I'm sorry, Storybook Land Canal Boats. This attraction is only located in Disneyland and in Paris. This also was an opening day attraction, and I found it very interesting that the miniature buildings and landscaping was not added until it had been opened for a year. So they had a funny little nickname for it. What was it? The Mud Bank Canal Boats or something
so.
Is what
I
they used
so.
To call it, because unfortunately you were just kind of looking at muddy hillside.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where I think Disney intended to have it something done cool with
it
for
probably,
opening day, but they just
ran
out of time.
Yep.
They're like, well, you know what, people will ride it, and people did,
and
it's still there. And you know what, it's one of those attractions I hope they never get rid of, because I really like it.
There is a bonsai tree in that attraction that was planted by Walt himself.
Oh, I did not know that. See,
I'm surprised they don't have some sort of like
commemorative thing.
Yeah, like a plaque or something. I don't know.
Well,
or
maybe
point, you know, or maybe
it'll
point
draw
it out.
Unwanted attention to it.
That could be.
So one of the interesting things, there are two. Let's see if you know this, because we're going to cover both attractions. There are two places in Fantasyland that have old ticket booths. Storybook Land Canal Boats is one. The Lighthouse used to be a ticket booth when they had A3E tickets. Do you know the other attraction?
Is it Alice in Wonderland?
It is Alice in Wonderland. It is the giant mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be a ticket booth. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool that they like repurposed it for that. That's a piece of history and nobody even knows it probably.
Right.
So you can wow your friends and people you go to Disneyland with by knowing that now. So,
fun facts of Disneyland.
Yeah. And one thing that keeps this kind of cool is, you know, over time they've added stuff over the years. You know, they've added Aladdin scenes. They've added Anna and Elsa's castle from
Arendelle.
Frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They've added Little Mermaid. So,
do you know what I saw? They actually, Mr. Toad, his Toad Hall was there. They removed it and put, I believe it was the temple or whatever. Is it the castle from Aladdin? What do you call that?
Oh, the
palace.
Palace.
The
yep.
palace. Put the palace there, and then I guess Toad Hall came back, but it was put into a different location.
Yeah, that's really cool. The other cool thing about this, too, is that they don't really... it doesn't go down for refurbishment very often. So, like, it's always pretty much open, and you've got Casey Jr. kind of going around.
You do sometimes see gardeners in there when you're
oh, yeah.
floating through, but...
Yeah. It's beautiful. In fact, the sign for the attraction is that big planter. You know, it says yep. Storybook mm-hmm. Land. Mm-hmm. And I think that's awesome. One interesting tidbit, I don't know if you had this on there, was in Fantasyland, there was a chunk of time that you had to be female to work the Fantasyland attractions. Oh,
I did not know.
Because the outfits and everything were all like frilly Princess-y and stuff. And whatever. So I think it's cool that you can now ride Storybook Land canal boats and you might have a male storyteller. That's Can you impressive. Imagine learning? You have to learn all that
That's
whole
a
spiel.
Ton. Yeah.
That's a ton.
Just a ton.
So pretty cool. The other technical thing that's kind of interesting, there are 13 boats. And the canal contains a bunch of water which flows under via underground pipes to the moat of Sleeping Beauty Castle and the Jungle Cruise and the Rivers of America, where it's pumped back to Storybook Land.
Wow.
So I enjoy this attraction. I always feel like I'm gonna fall off the boat though, because when you step onto it, it like moves around. So all right, moving on from Storybook Land canal boats, you go around the corner and we hit
It's a Small World. So this is also in Disneyland, Magic Kingdom, Tokyo, Paris, and Hong Kong. This was not an opening attraction or opening day attraction. This didn't open until May 28th of 1966. However, I'm sure most people know this, but this was originally designed for the 1964 New York World's Fair.
Correct.
Let's
yep.
see. It
sponsored
features,
by Pepsi.
Yep. Features 300 audio animatronic children. That just sounds a little creepy, but there's 300 of them in there.
I really enjoy. So one of the most famous things about this attraction is the music. And it was originally called,
love it or hate it.
Yep. It was originally called Children of the World was the working title of the attraction, and Walt had singer-songwriters Robert Sherman and Richard Sherman, the Sherman brothers, said that I need one song can be easily translated into many languages and can be played as a round, so like on a loop. So they wrote It's a Small World After All in the wake of the Cuban Missile Crisis, which influenced the song message of peace and brotherhood. When they first presented it to Walt, they played it as a slow ballad. Walt requested something more cheerful, so they sped up the tempo and sang in counterpoint. Walt was so delighted with the final result that he renamed the attraction It's a Small World after the Sherman Brothers song.
One interesting thing with this being designed originally for the World's Fair was the Walt Disney Company was actually only given 11 months to create and build the pavilion for the World Square. So that's just crazy to me that they did this in such a short time period.
You know, I kind of miss, this is sort of related to It's a Small World, but I kind of miss the fact that we don't really have, there still are World's Fairs, but they're not as big of a deal as they used to be. And look at how much stuff out of just this one World's Fair Disneyland got. So from this one World's Fair, we got It's a Small World. Mm-hmm. We got the Grand Canyon Diorama. We got Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. All these things were at the World's Fair.
And it was all the same World's Fair.
Think about how brilliant Walt was to have these companies pay for this, and then when the show was over, put it as Disneyland for an attraction. Like, they don't do anything like that anymore.
No. It looks like the It's a Small World at the World's Fair, they sold 10 million 60 cent and 95 cent tickets for children and adults.
That's crazy.
Collected in 2.5 year seasons. And all the proceeds were donated to UNICEF. That's awesome.
That is cool. Now, when they first put and installed it at Disneyland, they had, and I can't find the exact number now, you might have it in your list, but they had children from all around the world bring like water from like their country and like dump it into the flume. So that was pretty cool. I remember thinking that was a cool like opening day thing. Now, you did have something about the facade.
Oh, yes. So the facade was originally white with gold and silver accents. For a while, I'm trying to see when that was that they changed that.
Pink and white with pastel accents. Yeah, it didn't say when. It said portions of the left side of the original facade were removed in 1993 to make room for the entrance to Mickey's Toontown. As of 2015, the facade is white and gold trim as it was in 1966, except the original gold and silver paint of the clock, the smiling clock face is now entirely gold leaf.
Yeah, oh yes, that's true.
One other thing that I just saw here that I totally forgot about was I love the topiaries around there.
Yes, those are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, the attraction was closed from January to November, and this refurbishment added the 29 new Disney characters, each in their native land, in the attraction. So I know Tag has mixed feelings about these, additions, but I think it helps bring in the younger audiences because it's more, I guess, relatable, something that they would more recognizable for them. So yeah. I think it's cool.
Well, one of the cool things about the fact that it's that the exterior is white and gold, kind of going back to that, was that show that I told you about numerous times where he had the 10th anniversary special. Mm-hmm. So they had Mary Blair, who designed like the front of it, and she's designed murals and stuff for Disneyland like all over the place and Disney World, I believe, as well. In fact, I think some of her work is in the contemporary in Disney World. But they had her on there, and they were showing that, like, they had, like, a model, like, a foam model of the front of It's a Small World, and she held up this different color light. She's like, see, we could change it bit depending on, like, what type of lights we put there. We can make it any color or anything we want. Mm-hmm. So I think it's cool that instead of leaving it the pastel colors, you can just use lighting
right,
and do a lot of that stuff. And now, of course, they use it to do projection, firework projections on, and holiday projections on and stuff, so... I don't know. Like It's a Small World. I don't need to go on it a jillion times. There is also a holiday version. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a Small World Holiday, which I also really like, which actually was the first attraction at Disneyland to get any type of holiday overlay. So that is also really? Pretty cool. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Very cool.
I believe so. Hold on. I'm pretty sure that it was. I'll just say it was and cut that part out. Okay. So moving on.
We've got the Matterhorn. So now, this is really our...
Did you even know this was in Fantasyland?
I didn't. I guess I honestly just kind of thought Matterhorn was its own little thing. It would have to be Fantasyland because clearly it's not Tomorrowland, but...
It was the first mountain range in the park. Because now yes. You've got Space Mountain.
Yeah, that's true.
And Big Thunder Mountain.
That's
and
true.
Splash Mountain.
There's all sorts of mountains.
And it's the only one.
It is the only one. It is only in Disneyland, and it was opened back... June 14th, 1959.
1959 was an awesome year for Disneyland because I know this has nothing to do with Fantasyland, but 1959 we got Submarine Voyage. Mm-hmm. We got the monorail. Yeah. The monorail came in 1959. To the Submarine Voyage. We got a lot, like the whole rework of Tomorrowland was 1959.
So we'll be talking about 1959 next week.
1959 was a lot of additions.
This week's all about opening day. Next week's all about 1959, apparently.
Because, it's Tomorrowland. It's going to be a sad show because the state. Did you have something, anything? I'm
yes,
sure you do.
So I found this really entertaining. But so apparently the concept for the attraction, the facade of the attraction at least, was inspired because Walt was impressed by the real beauty of the Matterhorn. The real Matterhorn, because in case if you didn't know, but the Matterhorn is an actual mountain. It's not just located in Disneyland. But while he was in Switzerland, he grabbed a postcard of the mountain from a souvenir stand, sent it back to an Imagineer named Vic Green with the simple message of, Vic, build this. Walt. I just love that. Just straight to the point. I want it.
Why not?
It was interesting because I was reading that a lot of the excavating and a lot of the dirt that they had to move to build the castle actually was mounded up in the spot that the Matterhorn sits today. So it was kind of, I guess not really an eyesore, but it was just kind of this mounded up thing. They kind of did some stuff. They were trying to make it kind of a picnic spot. And then they had the, the Skyway. They actually built the mountain kind of around one of the support posts mm-hmm. for the Skyway, so it kind of
that was
covered
one of the
up
coolest
that eyesore.
I remember going on the Skyway and you go through the Matterhorn.
Yeah, you used to go through the Matterhorn. So they didn't really fill in the hole that the Skyway used to go through. They just kind of, I don't know, decorated, I guess would be a good way of saying it. One side has like ice crystally things, and then the other side has like jewels.
Well, for the longest time, it was the whole mountain was hollow.
That's just crazy.
They added a lot of the theming that we know mm-hmm. today later. Now, the Matterhorn not only is one of those things that up until now, it seems like with Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, I've seen pictures recently where that might be a new focal point for people to like see from far away. Mm-hmm. But I know when I used to go as a kid, going down I-5, we'd look for the top of the Matterhorn. We're like, there it is!
Yeah. Well, and I don't know what it's called. I don't know what the building is called now, but the Guardians of the Galaxy
Tower of Terror.
Used to be Tower of Terror. That used to be another one that you could, as you're walking up, you just see that looming over the park. And it was just like, ooh, we're getting close.
But
so fun.
there it holds an important place in history because it was the first tubular steel roller coaster in the world.
You know, it was kind of terrifying back when it was that whole like.
It's still kind of terrifying. Just,
but you weren't really strapped in with how the old ride vehicles were. That was a little terrifying.
But
you just had this like flimsy little lap belt. You didn't actually have like sides to it per se.
Now people lament the old cars though because you used to be able to sit. You were in somebody's lap, basically.
Yeah, that was a little awkward because I went with my brother, so that was awkward.
But if you and Vern went, you'd probably appreciate that'd be fine. That. You know,
he could save me from the abominable snowman.
Harold, I think it's Harold.
Harold, yes.
I believe it's Harold. And what was I going to say? So one of the interesting things is the reason you splash down in water is instead of doing a braking system, they can slow it down. And, well, you know, there's a famous video of Walt riding it and stuff, and he looked like he was having a heck of a time. So just remember, when you go on the Matterhorn and you're getting bumped around and things seem a little rough, just remember it was the first tubular steel roller coaster.
You know, the last time I was on it, though, they did do a refurbishment recently, which included the new ride vehicles. It seemed like it was a lot smoother. So I don't know if they did something to the track, but it seemed like it was a much smoother ride than it had been in the past.
I think they fix it a lot, and I think that over time, I think just because the way the track is laid out, I think it just keeps getting banged up and then it gets worse. Because it goes down quite a bit for refurbishment of doing this type of stuff.
Well, it's so old.
There's 20 trains with two cars. Riders are arranged one across in three rows for a total of six riders per train. And then there are two tracks.
There are two tracks.
There's a Fantasyland track and a Tomorrowland track. And honestly, I believe it's the Tomorrowland track that I like going on because it's there's some different drops and stuff and different views that I like better than the Fantasyland track.
I wish I could somehow just do both of them back to back so I could have a good comparison, but obviously.
Well, they have fast pass now, so you just maybe time the line right and then you go on the one and then you get the fast pass and go on the other.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Oh, didn't they back in the day, was it Mickey that used to scale the side of the mountain?
Mickey did, and they had like people and they'd play like yodeling music and stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, can't forget. That's where Tinkerbell steps off
flies
across the castle. And Dumbo, if you do the...
I forgot that they switched.
Remember Dumbo. Dreams Come True? Mm-hmm. They have Dumbo as well. No, they have both. They have Tinkerbell and Dumbo. And if you watch the Halloween fireworks, they have Zero.
Ooh, that'd be cool. I got to see that. No, that's what I was going to say. So the new ride vehicles are basically the same ride vehicles that you would be seated in for Space Mountain in Walt Disney World.
Really?
It is. Mm-hmm. Isn't that cool? I mean, I guess now that I think about it, it's like, oh, yeah, no, it is three, you know, single seats, three, but, you know, two little cars hooked together. But yeah.
I also forgot, we cannot stop talking about Matterhorn without talking about its famous Jack Wagner, the voice of Disneyland. Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor. That plays over and over. But apparently they changed it in 2005 to say, remain seated with your seatbelt fastened. Permanecer sentados, por favor. I'm terrible at Spanish. That's almost as good as the... Now then, hang on to them hats and glasses.
Now. That was last week.
Yes. All right, so moving on. What is across the parade route from the Matterhorn?
Alice in Wonderland.
So what do you know about that?
You know, I was really surprised to learn that it's only in Disneyland. It is not located in any of the other parks. I don't know why that's mind-boggling to me, but it is. This was opened in June 14th, 1958, and I kind of feel like there's a theme with this, too. This was originally planned as a walkthrough attraction.
Well, those are cheap to build, I guess, if you just have walkthrough. This has gone over. This has had quite a few alterations over the years.
Yes.
The biggest one has got to be in July of 2010. California's Department of Occupational Safety and Health said that the handrails and everything on the exterior portion of the track needed to be added, so they closed it. It reopened with temporary rails in August of 2010. It stayed that way for almost 4 years, and it looked terrible. Finally, in 2014, they did an extended refurbishment. The exterior did some work on the rides, so they widened it and everything like that and brought it up to code or whatever. And it's a little less thrilling. That's one of my favorite things about this attraction is you go outside and you're up above everything. And I just think it was a great use of space because really it's not that big of an attraction.
No, it's not.
So they use
and it's kind of like built into the side of the castle.
Yeah, it's great. There's a great view if you come out and the the monorail is going by and stuff. Like, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Let's see. So back in, there was another refurbishment in 2014 that did have several enhancements. Many of the scenes were updated with digitally projected images and effects, which did include footage taken, right from the film. And it looks like the Cheshire Cat figures received some new special effects too. And some new figures of Alice were added too.
Yeah. I actually wrote it shortly after.
She's in there a couple of.
Yeah.
She's in there. You see her a couple of times. Some of the other dark rides that we'll get to, you only actually see the namesake once in the attraction. But you see her several times.
Yeah. No, I actually think that this is one of those attractions that was definitely plussed by adding digitally projected stuff. I think it was great. I like it. Anything else?
That's all I've got.
Moving on. So this is interesting. So we just had Alice in Wonderland, but there's a second attraction from the same movie.
The Mad Tea Party, or better known as the Teacups. So this was an opening day attraction. It currently is in Disneyland, Magic Kingdom, Tokyo, Paris, and Hong Kong.
So no Shanghai.
No Shanghai. Not too many. I don't know. I didn't find too many interesting tidbits on this, but back in 2005, in honor of the park's 50th anniversary, one of the teacups was actually painted gold.
Yep. I remember seeing that and riding it. One other alteration that they made to this attraction that kind of saddened a lot of people was for a while there, Disney went down this crazy, everything has to be as safe as it possibly can be.
Well, I read that there was an accident. There was some sort of an issue that prompted the teacups.
But so it became very, very difficult to spin the teacup, and they've since released a little bit more, so you can still get some.
And what is it? Is it the purple teacup that supposedly is the fastest?
I don't know. I didn't know there was supposedly
one of the teacups can spin is the fastest spinning. I believe it's the purple one.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting. Well, I know.
I mean, I've never timed it out to see.
Right.
Stood there with my little speed gun to see which one's faster, but
I like the it's Mad rumored. Tea Party. I like the fact that they play the like tea party song or whatever. Mm-hmm, love that.
The sometimes
I'll
song.
Just sometimes I'll just stand and look at it and just think it's just super cool. At night, have you ever seen it at night?
Yes, I the love the lanterns and the like hanging light. Yes, yeah, it looks awesome.
Beautiful.
I do find it hilarious that every once in a while you will see the character, the Mad Hatter that walks around the park, and Alice will go on and ride it every once in a while. I think that's really a good touch.
I believe so too. Yeah. So Laura, one of our listeners, she's ridden this with me. She rode it once after begging and begging because she hates the teacups because they make her sick.
It's a good reason not to ride it.
So she doesn't like them. I like them. I like trying to go really fast and then lean your head back and then you're like, oh, and everything's going crazy. I don't know. I like it. I think it's cool. I've also seen the versions in Paris, and I've seen the versions at Magic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. The version of Magic Kingdom is really kind of, to me, it seemed very dark and kind of bland because it's covered, but it's not. It doesn't have like the cool lanterns and stuff.
No, it's got, but it does have a really cool like oversized teapot in the middle. I thought that was an interesting, cool touch because then you kind of feel on that one, you feel more like you're miniaturized and you're on the table. Of the tea party versus
now Disneyland Paris is really cool because its covering is actually petal shaped glass and it's near gardens, so you get some of that outside light, but it's still covered because weather there. It also has the Dormouse's teapot, so just like at Magic Kingdom you were saying, and the teacup designs were later used for Tokyo and Hong Kong Disneyland's teacups, so that's pretty cool. I just remember thinking that the design for the Disneyland Paris one was really pretty. Like, I thought that the design
really
was pretty,
pretty
cool.
That sounds really pretty with the
glass, yeah. So, anything else for the Mad Tea Party?
Not that I've got. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. So, you know, this is one of those things. I'm really nervous that this is going to be not long for the park because I feel like now I'm a big Disney fanatic. I love all the movies. Obviously love the parks. But I actually hadn't seen Mr. Toad or The Wind in the Willows until recently. So it's I would wonder how many people actually are riding that attraction that have actually seen the cartoon. But it is interesting because I would bet most of them haven't, but there's always a line like way out the door to go do that attraction. So clearly they're still enjoying it. So that's pretty awesome. Disneyland is the only place that currently has Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. It was formerly at the Magic Kingdom. They did, however, close that. This was an opening day attraction. And this was actually originally planned to be a roller coaster, but it became a dark ride because Walt only wanted attractions that were appropriate for all ages, and he didn't think a roller coaster would be suitable for the little ones at that point.
Yeah, I love Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. One part of it, I guess, that I do not like is on a hot summer day going through hell at the end. It is so hot in there.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's a great attraction, and I hope they never get rid of it. I'm actually surprised they got rid of it at Magic Kingdom. In fact, if you talk to people that went to Disney World a lot, they miss it.
Which, like I said, is just really speaks to how well this attraction was done, because all of the other attractions in Fantasyland are very recognizable characters, and you feel like you're kind of immersed into those movies. Whereas Mr. Toad, not so much. Most people don't even know who he is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I hope it doesn't close. I like it.
I like this attraction. I hope it doesn't go anywhere. And I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I haven't heard any rumors or anything. It'd be hard to find something else to put in there. I don't know. Moving on to now the next attraction, which is one of the longest waits in the entire park at any time of day, it seems
it
like.
It is one of Disneyland's most popular attractions.
Which is crazy.
Considering all of the other amazing attractions that you could go and visit. But Peter Pan's Flight is what we are talking about. Did you know that every time I walk by, I realize that there's a hugely long line.
Yes.
But I did not realize that it's actually deemed one of the most popular attractions in Disneyland.
You know, I thought that one of the reasons that the line would be there would be because of the fact that, like, maybe the capacity was low.
That's what I thought, too. Yeah, but, I mean, it's one of, you know, it's one of those... What is that called? Those, you know, you move along. They don't actually ever have to really stop the vehicles per se to let you on and let you off. So it's, you know, it's continuously going through. This was one of the opening day attractions. It is currently located in Disneyland, Magic Kingdom, Paris, Tokyo, and Shanghai. So the original thought for this I found really interesting, and there was a couple of them that were like this, but the original thought was that you would be Peter Pan, and so that the guests were going to fly through as if they were Peter Pan. However, I guess they must have tested this somehow, and the audience were actually a little confused, and they didn't quite grasp the concept, and were very, very concerned that they didn't actually get to see Peter Pan in the attraction and didn't understand why they didn't see it. So they obviously scrapped that idea, and so now you're in Captain Hook's boat and you're flying around.
Yeah, I really think it's cool. I think it's one of the coolest attractions. I like flying over things. I love going between London and
You're going like over, I don't want to say the landscape, but like the city at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's over to Neverland. Mm-hmm. And it's got all the like stars and stuff, and I always thought, like, how do you get in there to, like, maintain this attraction?
Have you seen it with the lights on? Have you seen... Don't do it. It kind of ruins it.
Does it?
Yeah. It's actually pretty... I don't want to say basic, but it's not as, like, technical as you would have thought it would be. But which
I'm
just
sure.
To me is just amazing, because how do they make it look as awesome as it is?
Well, you know, dark. It's dark in there. Mm-hmm. It's hard to see. I don't know. It's super cool. I like the glowing of it, you know, with the black lights and everything. It looks pretty awesome. It's obviously, you said, it's one of the most popular attractions in the park.
So this one was interesting, though, because it's in it's in Shanghai, but it's not in Hong Kong. Whereas, I don't know if anybody's keeping track out there, most of the other attractions, though, if they're in that part of the world, they're actually in Hong Kong and not Shanghai. So yeah. I thought that was interesting that they did a little flip-flop there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I remember seeing video back in the day of like when they were testing the ships. Mm-hmm. And like from the and they had this warehouse. They had this kind of thing set up in the warehouse. I just remember thinking, like, that is so cool. Even by today's standards, I think it's a pretty cool attraction. Obviously, it's still one of the most popular mm-hmm. attractions, of course. I also like at Disneyland, I really like the outside of the attraction at Magic Kingdom and Tokyo Disneyland. It still has that like carnival look on the outside, yeah. which I don't like. Mm-hmm. But this really goes into looking like London. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So the next thing we're going to after Peter Pan's flight is
the Sleeping Beauty Castle, and we're actually going to specifically talk about the walkthrough portion of the castle. So this was actually originally opened back in April 29th, 1957, was when the visitors were first able to walk through the castle and kind of view several dioramas depicting the story of Sleeping Beauty. This did, however, close for unspecified reasons. On October 7th of 2001, a lot of people thought that it had something to do with the September 11th attacks, but nothing concrete nothing ever official. Came out. So, but I kind of wonder, and I don't think it, maybe it didn't take this long, but they did reopen it again on July 17th, 2008. And that's after they refurbished or redid it. And it reopened in the, with the style of the Earl dioramas with enhanced new technology that they did not have back in 1957.
Have you been in there?
It is. I have. It's really so cool. It's, you really feel like you kind of walked into the storybook. I really like the feel of it in there.
It was also one of the first attractions they did this with. They also did it with the Finding Nemo submarine voyage. Because you have to walk upstairs and it's not ADA compatible, there's actually a room off to the side that you can take, you know, if you're unable to walk the stairs, you can go in the little room and walk. And actually, it's just like somebody walks through with a camera and like is walking through the little attraction. So if you don't want to walk up the stairs or if you're unable to walk up the stairs, there is this alternate viewing, which is pretty cool that they added when they reopened it back in 2008. One of the other things that's interesting about the castle in general, I mean, the walkthrough is pretty awesome, but the castle in general is very rarely do they ever like cover it in tarps and refurbish it.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
So I know that right now at the park,
well, could you imagine like being that person going to Disneyland and seeing the it covered?
Yeah,
that would ruin it.
Well, they did a complete refurbishment right before the 50th anniversary in 2005. Because mm-hmm. I remember seeing pictures and everything from it, and they did a scrim, so it looked like the castle was like a painted on the tarp thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it hasn't really had a lot of that work done since. And during the 60th anniversary, they had toppers that went on all the rooftops. And now that they've finally taken them off, there's definitely some damage that needs to be repaired. So I'm hoping soon that they do a good refurbishment because they need to.
And I can understand, like I said, I can understand how they'd want to put that off because that's kind of, I mean, that's the big iconic thing of the park. So it'd be hard to kind of, right, I don't know, cover it up and not have it, you know, yeah, be present. So
yeah, because people go, maybe they go once in their lifetime,
exactly,
in the castle. You
exactly.
know, it's the focal point. So moving on. So what is what can you see through the the entrance of the castle if you're on Main Street?
The King Arthur Carousel. So this is only in Anaheim. So this is only in Disneyland. It looks like it was originally built.
Now, they do have other carousels in other parks.
Yes.
It's just not King Arthur's.
Not King Arthur's, yep. This is interesting to me. This carousel was originally built in 1875, and it operated at Sunnyside Beach Park in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, from 1922 onwards. And then the ride was later relocated to Disneyland, where it was refurbished and modified, and then opened with the park on July 17th, 1955. So this attraction is not actually original to Disneyland. So that's...
That's pretty cool.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like that's probably one of the only, but It's a Small World, I guess, technically wasn't original to Disneyland.
Right, but this
either.
Has like history to mm-hmm. it, which is really cool. One of the other things that's interesting is it's not where it actually was located when the park first opened. They actually relocated it when they did the refurbishment of Fantasyland in 1983. So they did the refurbishment. They moved it to where it is, so slightly backwards, and added a new roof. And then in 2003... they took the whole thing apart. They did an extensive renovations that included rebuilding the entire turntable platform, which I remember reading about this previously, that it was rotting. So like the attraction was going to fall apart soon if they didn't do anything. Computerized operating console and system was halts the carousel each time at the same spot so they can do ADA compliance and a ramp and stuff a lot easier. Removal of a row of four horses to accommodate a four-horse bench and wheelchair clamps with an access ramp, which reduced the count of horses to 68. One of the horses... the princess and the jester rounding boards were completely repainted into 18-karat gold, which is pretty cool. And one of the horses actually was painted in commemoration of the 50th anniversary, the horse named Jingles was gold from nose to tail, trimmed in 18 karat gold leaf, and set apart as a photo opportunity.
Wow.
And Julie Andrews, Jingles was ceremoniously dedicated to Julie Andrews in 2008 as an honorary ambassador.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And painted her, and painted beneath the hidden Mickey on her cantle. So that's pretty cool.
So the reason that there is a carousel in the park is because of Griffith Park, which Walt Disney, for some of you who may or may not know, that is where Walt Disney would watch his girls play. And he kind of dreamed up his vision for what is now Disneyland. But he wanted something similar for his new theme park. And this is actually a carousel consisting of all quote unquote jumpers, which are the moving horses. And I guess I never realized, because most carousels, only some of the horses move up and down and other ones are stationary. And I guess I never paid that close of attention to realize that all of the ones in Disneyland move. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty cool. It's definitely a piece of history and it's super, super neat. I don't think people think about it a lot. They just think, oh, it's a carousel. But there's a lot there. So pretty cool. All right, moving on to the other side of the castle. What do we come across next?
Snow White's Scary Adventure.
Snow White's Scary Adventure is located at Disneyland, of course, the Magic Kingdom in Disney World, Tokyo Disneyland, and Disneyland Paris. So anyway, one of the cool things about this attraction is if you look up in the window above the entrance, once in a while the window opens and the Evil Queen is up there. And it's really cool at night because you can see it a lot better.
Yeah, and I guess I never realized this, but the outdoor facade was made to resemble the Evil Queen's castle.
That is cool. I don't know if I knew that necessarily. Mm-hmm. It is cool. You can also, at the front, there's the storybook, and on top of it is the apple. And if you touch the apple, she cackles if it's working correctly. Mm-hmm. So that's also pretty cool. It's got some nice little touches like that that have been around for a long time.
Well, and somewhere in the attraction itself, and they had to change this because, unfortunately, too many people were being naughty, but somewhere in the attraction, the old hag witch would...
And the boat section.
Yep, would try and present you with an apple. And so people would actually steal the apple and keep it as a souvenir. So now it's actually just a
hologram.
A projection or a hologram.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the coolest things that I like about this attraction that gets me every time, and I love it, is when she's the witch, and she goes magic mirror on the mall, and then she turns and then it's the hag on the other side. Yep. She goes, with this disguise I'll fool them all, and I'm like, oh, I love that because it looks like the queen, and then she turns.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool. One thing I do not like about this attraction, however, is I feel that it ends very abruptly, because you go in the room and there's all the dwarfs going up the thing, and then there's like the rock work and there's like a thunder lightning, and then like it's over. They all the look end. Happily ever after. I'm like, what happened? Like, I feel like if you didn't watch the movie like really recent before you go on that, you're like, what just happened?
Mm-hmm. It isn't. Everything... Yeah, it is interesting because the prince, you don't see the prince, do you?
Mm-mm. You don't really see the prince. And then apparently, too, just like the one you were saying about Peter Pan, is the original ride was supposed to be that you were supposed to be going through like Snow White.
Which I don't quite understand that. I don't understand how you're... I understand you're flying your Peter Pan. I get that concept. I don't understand how you're supposed to pretend that you're Snow White going through this. But obviously, it didn't work out. So there's more people that thought my way than how the Imagineers originally were thinking, but
yeah, I don't know. It's a cool attraction. It's one of those attractions too that, you know, it's busy enough, but like usually it's not too long of a wait to get.
That's
on.
True. And I always feel bad because whenever I go on that attraction with small children, I do think it is a little scary and a little a little bit too much for small
think,
kids.
I mean, we're gonna talk about it in a minute, but don't you think Pinocchio's During Journey is even scarier?
Yeah,
I mean that's really that could give
scary.
You nightmares.
And with how dark, I mean. You know, well, so many kids rides. Are afraid of the dark and how dark it is in those rides. That kind of just adds to it. Did we mention that this was an opening day attraction?
I don't think so.
But this, okay, so this was an opening day attraction.
Yeah, it's super cool. Moving on from Snow White's Scary Adventures, we move on to Pinocchio's Daring Journey, which is also a dark ride. It did not open with the land in 1955. It actually opened second after Tokyo Disneyland's version.
What?
So in Tokyo Disneyland, it opened on April 15th, 1983. And the next month, April 23rd, 1983, it opened in Fantasyland in Disneyland.
Wow.
And just under 10 years later, it opened at Disneyland Park in Paris.
Interesting.
In April of 92.
So if you're keeping track, this ride is only located in Disneyland, Paris, and Tokyo. Another interesting little thing that I saw was this is actually the first attraction created by Disney to use holographic materials. And the scene in the ride that they're referencing here has to do with when the boys are turning into donkeys. It also uses the Pepper's ghost illusion, which is used extensively in the Haunted Mansion, when the blue fairy disappears, leaving a pile of fiber optic fairy dust on the floor.
That is pretty cool. That is pretty cool. So we talked about opening day attractions and stuff. So what was here before? Well, it was the Mickey Mouse Club Theater, and they decided to put the Pinocchio Dark Ride in it. So, I think I like this attraction as well. I think it's scary. We kind of talked about that a minute ago. I feel like for little kids, because there's an area where Stromboli is putting you in the cage, and then you're going out to Pleasure Island, and then there's the kids, you know, the cigar shop and everything. And it's just it's kind of scary.
The kids turning into the donkeys.
Yeah, it's scary. So I'm glad they have it there. It goes with the Village House restaurant, which is right next to it. That's also kind of themed to Pinocchio. I know this isn't an attraction-related thing, but I have to put this in there because I think it's really interesting. So at the Village House in the restaurant, as you come in the door, if you turn around and look, there's an exit sign that when they designed it or whatever, mm-hmm. they actually put the exit sign off-centered accidentally. And they're like, oh, crap, what are we going to do? We put this exit sign off-centered, mm-hmm. And it looks all out of whack. So what they did was they painted Cleo, the cat, pulling on it.
Oh,
so it looks like Cleo moved the sign off to the mm-hmm. side. So clever way that Disney does that.
Very clever.
So with Pinocchio's Daring Journey, we have completed our Grand Circle tour of Fantasyland. That was a marathon, not a sprint. but I like Fantasyland. I can see why Walt really enjoyed it, and seeing a lot of his ideas and things that were animated in 2D come to 3D life. Mm-hmm. Like, that must be really cool.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. So we did get a new iTunes review. Actually, not so new. It was back in December that this was left, but OMGLOL2004 said, we've tried many a Disneyland podcast, and these two are the best we found. They do a very good job of bringing the news and display great passion and love for Disney and the parks. They also are not annoying like most of the other shows out there. Well, thank you, OMGLOL2004. That's really awesome. And thank you so much for leaving that review for us.
Yes, I'm very happy to know that we are not annoying like Yay. The other shows out there. I've listened to quite a few other Disneyland podcasts and stuff, and I haven't thought anybody was particularly annoying. But I'm glad that maybe you thought they were and we aren't. So awesome. As we wrap up this week, we want to thank all of you for listening each and every week. Please don't forget to support the show if you can by going to DisneylandWeekly.com/support or by sharing Disneyland Weekly on social media or word of mouth with other Disneyland fans that you know.
That is all we have for you this week. You can help the show by leaving a review on iTunes, like OMGLOL2004, and letting us know how we are doing, good or bad. If you want to keep up with the show, you can follow us on Facebook by searching for Disneyland Weekly, on Twitter at DL Weekly, or sending us an email at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com. Feel free to email, Facebook, or tweet us any questions, feedback, or suggestions that you may have about the show.
We'll be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
And thank you for hanging on as long as you have.
Yeah. Thank you for bearing with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.